What will Elon Musk do with Twitter? The world's richest man now in charge of one of the largest social media platforms. What will it mean for content and regulation? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. You know, after months of uncertainty and a long legal battle, the world's wealthiest man has now taken charge of one of the most influential social media platforms. But it's not yet clear what Elon Musk intends to do with Twitter. There's already been a staffing shake-up, with Musk firing at least four top executives. And many on the platform speculate he'll reinstate banned Twitter accounts, including that of former US President Donald Trump. Although Musk says no decision has actually been made. Many right-wing political figures see his takeover as a win for free speech, while others are concerned it may give rise to more hate speech on Twitter. We'll bring in our guests in a moment. But first, this report from Kristen Salumi in New York.
Elon Musk appeared at Twitter's California headquarters as his $44 billion takeover of the social media platform was beginning to sink in. Musk, who'd already changed his Twitter title to Chief Twit, confirmed the news in, you guessed it, a tweet on Friday morning. But it's how free the bird will be that is of most concern to users. His first move was to fire CEO Parag Agrawal and top executives. It's no secret that the Tesla CEO thinks there's far too much censorship on Twitter.
There are concerns amongst people that I spoke to that people or accounts that have engaged in disinformation or misinformation or forms of harassment or bullying may be allowed to stay on the platform in a way that they previously have not.
Musk previously said he'd reinstate former President Donald Trump, who was banned in the wake of the January 6th riots. Trump responded on his own social media platform Friday that he was happy Twitter is, quote, now in sane hands. But Musk announced plans to form a content moderation council, saying no major content decision or account reinstatements would happen before they met. And appealing to advertisers, Musk tweeted that Twitter obviously cannot become a free-for-all hellscape where anything can be said with no consequences. Musk has pledged to follow the law of the land, but that is a concern in authoritarian countries where Twitter has historically resisted calls to take down anti-government tweets.
Some of those rules are going to mean that people in certain countries are going to have a very locked down version of Twitter, whilst others are going to have a much more freewheeling experience. It's going to be a minefield for him to operate.
After 9 years as a publicly traded company, on Friday, Twitter, now under Elon Musk, filed paperwork to have its shares removed from the stock market on November 8th, the first official step to going private. While some employees were terminated on Friday, Musk has pushed back against reports that he planned to cut 75% of staff, but he has not denied that big changes are ahead. Kristen Salumi, Al Jazeera, New York.
Well, Musk says he wants to reform Twitter with fewer restrictions and create a digital town square. But in response to Musk's tweet that the bird is freed, the EU Commissioner for the Internal Market, Thierry Breton, tweeted back, in Europe, the bird will fly by our rules. Under the EU's Digital Services Act, tech companies are required to take down illegal material, including hate speech, abuse and incitement. It's among the many reactions on Twitter. Some were concerned about the functionality of the site itself, saying it'll become a wasteland, which will either make it more chaotic and addictive or unusable. And many tweeted about the possible return of former President Donald Trump after he was banned for life. Harry Littman says Musk could alter the American political landscape and make chaos and turmoil rain down. And many far-right political figures are welcoming Musk's takeover of Twitter. Well, let's bring in our panel now. We have in New York, Suzanne Nossel, the CEO of PEN America, a leading human rights organization and author of Dare to Speak. defending free speech for all. In Cardiff, we have Matt Navarra, a social media consultant and former digital communications advisor to the UK government. And also in New York, Bradley Tusk, a co-founder at Tusk Venture Partners and an adjunct professor at Columbia Business School. A warm welcome to you all. If I could start with Suzanne. So what do you think? Will the editorial content and direction of Twitter now change radically under Elon Musk?
Look, all eyes are on Musk. When he first began this transaction, he spoke very broadly about getting rid of all of the guardrails for content moderation on Twitter. He seemed determined to correct what he saw as political bias, and he thought the way of doing that was to dismantle all the rules. There are some signs as the deal has gone through that he's rethinking, that he may be learning. He said to advertisers, look, this can't become a free-for-all hellscape. He realizes that's a genuine danger. And that is what would happen if you did away with all the rules wholesale. He has now said he's going to set up a council, something like perhaps the Facebook Oversight Board, that is going to bring together diverse voices to weigh in on content moderation decisions. So I think there's some glimmers of hope that it's dawning on him that this is far more complex than he bargained for, and that a one size sweeping away of all of the rules is not going to create the environment for rich discourse that he purports to want, that instead it would be a kind of Tower of Babel where disinformation, online harassment, hatred, vitriol would reign.
All right. Interesting. Matt, do you think then the concerns about it becoming a haven for far-right extremism, hate speech, and that disinformation which Suzanne was talking about, do you think that's now maybe not much of a concern or not too much of a concern as it was a few months ago?
I think anything that involves Elon Musk involves taking it with a pinch of salt, because the man changes his mind like the weather. You know, things that he said he wanted to do with Twitter a few months ago have already started to change in the first few days of this transaction going through. So I think we need to sort of wait and see. But I do think that, you know, Twitter is known to have issues with, like many social media sites, with harassment and bullying and abuse. And I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And I think that some of the suggestions that Elon Musk makes, I think that the complexities of it and the impact it will have, I think he's underestimating. And if you look to sites like Parler and Truth Social, Trump's platform, and Rumble, these aren't places that are A, very profitable, B, much fun to be around, and C, that stick around a great deal of time with a large number of people. So I think, you know, no one wants to hang around in that, certainly not a large group of people like the size that Twitter has to deal with at the moment on its platform. So I think he's got his work cut out, and I think it's going to be one of the biggest business challenges he's taken on yet.
All right, talking about business challenges, maybe a good point to read this tweet by Guy Verhofstadt. He's a member of the European Parliament, and he tweeted, so one man at Elon Musk now owns the biggest debate in the world. Bradley, should people be worried about the influence of the wealthy, the super rich, in this critical industry?
Perhaps, but I think for different reasons than we've been discussing so far. On the whether Twitter will become a hellscape, I would argue it already is. And regardless of what Musk tries to do, positive or negative, he's not going to be able to impact it that much. It's going to come down to, at least in the U.S., new regulations that force change. But overall, it seems to me that maybe one hidden reason why Musk is doing this that we haven't really looked at much so far is there is no person on the planet that benefits more from hype around retail investing than Elon Musk. Tesla is worth $721 billion as of market close yesterday. The real value is probably one-tenth that. And the rest is pixie dust and hype, but he is better at that than anyone else. And the machine that creates the most pixie dust, the most hype, is Twitter. So both for Tesla now and SpaceX, when that goes public, Neuralink, in all these situations, if he can control the mechanism to keep artificially boosting the price of his shares, that may be why it makes the most sense for him economically.
So there is a big business incentive. Suzanne, how can one ensure that there won't be an unnecessary, shall we say, overlapping of motives for how social media work in this kind of case?
You know, it's difficult. I mean, these are private companies. They're not regulated today. The idea that they'll be regulated in real time here in the United States, I think, is unfortunately pretty far-fetched. There's some regulations I would support. There's some regulatory proposals that I think go too far. But the fact is, we have been politically hamstrung, even though there's an ostensible consensus across Democrats and Republicans that something needs to be done about big tech. The minute you get down to specific proposals, there are deadlocks, and there has been no movement. The European Union, as you touched on, is moving forward in a experimental way with putting obligations on the companies to moderate content, to take down hateful speech and disinformation. And those obligations are serious. They bear significant fines. Now, when it comes to Musk's ability to promote his own business interests on the platform, that may not be swept up in European regulation. He may be quite free to do that. And so I think that is something we have to monitor. The minute you have a public square of this size and scope that is the domain for so much of our political discourse in the hands of one man, he's got Saudi investors who are number two on the list now in terms of the most powerful backers of Twitter. And so I think there are serious political implications. There is going to be a national security review of the transaction, although I think the consensus is that it doesn't really pose any issues because Musk is an American.
Interesting. Well, Matt, Musk says he's going to form a content moderation council. Will that be enough?
Well, we've seen it have some levels of success with Facebook's equivalent, the Oversight Board. But even then, that's not without people throwing a lot of criticism at the panel in terms of what they're able to do and capable of doing in terms of the scale of the operation for a big social media platform. And it still doesn't get rid of the problems of different regulations in different countries and people from different sides of the political spectrum feeling that one side's being heard and seen more on a platform than the other. I think that all of these problems are going to continue to exist, and there's nothing that Musk that I can see has got or can do that's going to change that. And I think although he's been really successful with all of the other businesses he's had in terms of SpaceX and Tesla and things, you know, they are very different businesses in terms of the mechanics of them and the fact that it doesn't have this big human element in the middle of it that everyone has an opinion on. So I think that that's going to be really challenging. And I think going back to we were talking about regulation a moment ago, it is good to see that the EU and the UK are now moving forwards with some levels of regulation. But for those that are not in the UK or in the EU seeing that progress being made without people sort of fighting over whether actually now it's just a grab bag of all sorts of ideas and if it actually is overreaching in some areas and not delivering in others. So it's still a long way to go in terms of the regulation. But this is, again, something big that he's going to have to tackle, as well as things like what you do with countries like Russia and other countries with more repressive regimes.
When you look at it like that, I'm wondering, Bradley, is it now just a matter of time before we see Musk's self-proclaimed free speech absolutism run afoul of regulators? Are they on a collision course?
Well, at least not in the U.S., because right now we really don't have any regulation. So, look, whether Musk is well-intentioned or not, his council moderation or what Zuckerberg has at Facebook or anything else fundamentally can't work because the business model requires the opposite. Twitter, Facebook, any platform makes their money through advertising. Advertising rates are based on the number of eyeballs, the number of clicks, and whether, you know, we like it or not, toxic content, negative content drives clicks significantly more than positive content. So no matter how they want to try to moderate it to be good, it directly interferes with their economic incentives.
The whole business model, Bradley, is then going to push them towards more content of controversial, potentially disinformation and extreme speech?
Absolutely. Unless we do something about it, right? So the EU has proposed this. It's come up in the US, which is, right now, the platforms are not legally liable for content posted by users. As a result, I can defame all of you all I want. You could come after me for damages, but odds are I don't have that much to recover. But you can't go after Twitter. You can't go after Facebook. You can't go after TikTok. Once that changes, if that changes, and the platforms become legally liable for everything that gets posted, and if they don't deal with it properly, they stand to lose billions of dollars in legal judgments. then all of a sudden you'll see real change. But just relying on the good intentions of the company, or quite frankly, the good intentions and ability of the government, the regulators, the academics, none of that's going to do the trick.
Matt, is it that's the situation in the US, and I'm wondering, it's a different situation in other places. The EU's Digital Services Act, is that actually tightening the rules and making social media platforms, are going to make them, I think in 2024, going to make them responsible for the content, for hate speech, incitement, terrorism, child sex abuse, and so on?
It's quite amazing that we're still sat here in the year that we are in, 2022, and we're only now just getting the sort of beginnings of regulation for these platforms that I think by anyone's kind of standards of looking at what's gone on in the last 10 years with social media has clearly got some questions to answer in terms of its negative impacts. But here we are. We've got something on the way. And I think the UK's kind of approach to it and the EU's is somewhat broadly similar. EU is slightly further ahead in terms of where they are in terms of getting it installed. But there's still the big question, like for the UK, for example, and one of the things is about having sort of legal but harmful content in terms of things that are subjective in terms of their should they be up, should they be down. And these questions are never going to be satisfactory
about,
to...
Matt, you're talking about the UK's online safety bill, right? So that's a big question about who defines what is harmful, even if it's not legal?
It is, and that's one debate that's raging with that, and it's actually been delayed in the last week in terms of if it's getting passed through the House to get it to finally put into law. But there's also questions around like age protection for kids and children that are still able to sign up to these platforms, and then if you actually put restrictions on platforms so people have to provide ID for them, then it can cause problems in other areas. So you're kind of like spinning plates and turning one key and another lock closes, and it is the most complex kind of business to enter into. And none of this legislation is going to change things dramatically, but it will finally put some liability on the companies. And recently in the UK, we've had the case of Molly Russell, who sadly took her own life. And in that case, it was deemed from the coroner's report that social media played a large part in that and that things need to change. But we've heard all of this before, and we're now still sort of not really close enough to getting it sorted. But all of this is stuff that Elon Musk is going to have to tackle. I think he's going to be shocked with how much it's going to suck up a lot of his or his team's time.
Suzanne, I saw you a moment ago trying to get in on there. Let me give you a chance to weigh in on this.
Yeah, I mean, just to say, look, what both the EU and the UK regulations primarily do is put the onus on companies to erect systems and methods to moderate content robustly. And if they do that, then they do still enjoy significant shields from liability. And I think that is an effort to balance the, you know, what it is that we value about social media. You know, yes, it has many negative sides and there are harmful types of content that spread, but there's also great positives. I mean, social media is a tool for informing people, for exposing human rights abuses, for allowing people who are very isolated and cut off to connect and get their voices out. We can't lose sight of the ways in which social media is a vehicle and an enabler of free expression. And so what regulators are trying to do is, do a kind of surgical incision that cuts away that which is so damaging and harmful while preserving that which is positive.
Are they doing a good job, do you think, Suzanne? Society. Regulators in places like the EU and UK? What do you make of their efforts?
It's really early days. I mean, this is terra incognita. No one, not even those who run these platforms fully understand how content moves, what the implications are for democracy, how to dial up or dial back the algorithms and what the ramifications will be. So I think we're going to be experimenting for a long time. Something else to keep in mind is authoritarian regimes are experimenting too, with more aggressive new laws, banning fake news, suppressing dissent. And so we cannot be naive to think that all regulation is in this arena is a positive thing. And if you had staunch regulation where there was absolute liability from social media companies for everything on the platform, you know, I do think that would be the end of the immediacy that we enjoy in social media, where you can put up whatever you want. It doesn't go through a lawyer first. If they knew they could be liable for it, that would change. And that the whole modus operandi of social media and what it allows for in terms of communication, I think would be undercut. So these are difficult challenges.
While we're still trying to figure out the content side of things, Bradley, is it clear to you that Elon Musk is going to make a big push to try and increase the monetization side of Twitter?
Yeah, I think he will. And look, we should never underestimate him. He is an incredible visionary and business person. But it is really hard to make Twitter truly profitable. If he were to cut expenses by 75%, could that do the trick? Sure, but you're just totally weakening the business itself. So the $44 billion you spent to buy it, it becomes worth a lot less. So look, might he have a vision that none of us really understand yet? Sure, he's done that before. And in fairness to him, he probably does deserve the benefit of the doubt. But if you think about it, right now, Twitter's already not really a profitable business. I do think significant regulations are coming, definitely in Europe, hopefully in the United States. That will limit profitability further. And so it really has to be, as I was saying before, more of a means to an end to make money in other ways, like artificially boosting the share price of a Tesla, of a SpaceX, finding other ways to make him money.
Hmm. Matt, I'm wondering, what do you make of the idea that Twitter becomes a super app, a place for the exchange of goods and services, not just of comments and ideas?
Well, we're talking about social media at the moment with social media companies in the US and in Europe in terms of antitrust, in terms of is there monopolies here? Is there unfair levels of inability to compete? And so the idea that in the current climate, so someone like Elon Musk and Twitter can start pulling together companies into one super app and kind of start to try and build a much more larger platform with more facets to it seems like a tricky task on its own. But aside from that, you know, the idea of a super app is something that's come out of Asia a long time ago. In terms of WeChat, is probably the most well-known super app, if you will, of multiple kind of different apps within an app, and that does more than just one thing. Like you can do buying things and news and shopping and everything else. But you know, in Europe and in the US, you know, some of the apps, social apps, already are kind of partly that way already. In terms of Snapchat, for example, I think their CEO Evan Spiegel has talked about pushing more towards that direction. And we've seen with Meta and its apps, they often are a bit bloated in terms of how much functionality in there that people don't often use. And would we want to use Twitter or any app by Elon Musk and trust it with a lot more of our data and information to do more different transactions in there in a climate where privacy and data security is at the top of people's minds? So that, as well as the logistical challenges of pulling it together, I think it's a tall order. But again, like we were saying a moment ago, this is a guy that makes the impossible possible. So, you know,
right.
Who knows?
We've got about a minute and a half left. I can see Suzanne wants to weigh in on this. Go ahead again, Suzanne.
You know, just to say, look, I agree we should not underestimate Elon Musk. But I think Elon Musk, by the same token, must not underestimate the challenges of taking on Twitter and trying to manage this public square. I think he has a great deal to learn. I hope he listens to people. I think the idea of the council has potential, but Twitter's a global platform. You know, the breadth of voices that have to be represented, understanding linguistic differences, cultural differences, and how those color what content means on the platform, whether a particular phrase is a valid warning or instead could be incitement to violence. Those nuances are incredibly complex. And so I hope what we see is that he takes the time to listen, to learn, to engage, and to move in a measured way, because otherwise we could see a lot of damage. We have an election coming up in this country, you know, 10 days from now. Is it going to be open season for people who want to mislead people about how to go to the polls and cast their vote? Is that going to be a free-for-all on Twitter? You know, we don't know, but that's what we need to be watching for.
All right. Move in a measured way. I like that sentiment for us to end the show on. So let's thank all of our guests. It's been a beautiful discussion. Suzanne Nossel, Matt Navarra and Bradley Tusk. And thank you too for watching. You can see the show again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJ Inside Story. From me, Sami Zeidan, and the entire team here, for now, it's goodbye.